FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it is August 16th, 2017. Where did the summer go? Before you know it, it will be Labor Day, and then the hedge fund managers return from their long-awaited, long-deserved vacations in the Hamptons and other...
Long-deserved vacations? You're kidding me, right?
Of course.
You realize that the hedge fund industry... No, Kerry, sorry to cut you off. I wrote an article called Hedge Bombs, I think in 2012, where I was talking about since the financial crisis, they have massively underperformed the market, hedge funds. And each successive year, they have done worse. And the reason I know that hedge funds are a scam, S-C-A-M, scam with old capital letters and exclamation points and emojis, is because I worked in the hedge fund industry in the mid-90s, and I saw what a scam it was, the 2% and 20% of profit. You know what most of these guys do? First of all, you know, the definition of a hedge fund, right? It means they are theoretically hedged, like they should have as much long exposure as short exposure, because they're market neutral, generally speaking, right? Well, my hedge fund managers owned, on average, 100 stocks when I was there. Right. Mm-hmm. So they never had positions of more than 1%. And plus on top of that, their benchmark would be the Russell 2000, which today, because of the government being in printing money, does better than it used to be. But the Russell used to be the absolute worst index of all time.
Yeah.
So to beat your index, I mean, even is it a chimp throwing darts? I mean, a blind chimp throwing darts could beat the Russell 2000, and they would have 100 stocks. They're basically mimicking the market, and idiots were paying them 2% a year for managing their money and giving them 20% of the profits. And that's why the hedge fund industry is completely dying, and it will be soon completely dead. And anyone who gives money to someone to manage your funds, especially now that you have ETFs, it is insane. Especially because it's illiquid too. It's like putting your money in a CD. You can't take it out when you want. And when you do, there's big penalties. So, okay, go on. Hedge funds are having their well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, that was a note, a hint of sarcasm there. Put it that way, of course. But, you know, we're getting to that time of the year where everything hits the fan. We have an eclipse, a solar eclipse coming up.
Yes.
Which I think generally stuff happens around that. And who the heck else knows what else we have coming up. But what we do have coming up right now is Andrew Hoffman. Andy, good morning. And not that you need any introduction, mind you.
Right. Well, you already introduced me and you already had Andy Hoffman. So, yes, the solar eclipse, when people supposedly can't see reality for a few minutes, which is what the whole world has been in the financial world for years now. And eventually that solar eclipse will go away, and so will the fake markets and the fake news. And there's so many things that are going to change it. But as you know, my strong belief that the murderer of fiat currency and eventually this whole mirage is going to be crypto. And it's very exciting because I think the world is going to be changing like we've never seen it before in the coming years.
Yeah, well, hey, Bitcoin right now as we speak is up 41.34. I can't pull up Bitcoin Cash's quote, but I think it was around 300 plus the last time I looked. So, question about that, Andy. Do they now have the ability to make as much Bitcoin as they want, or at least Bitcoin Cash?
Well, Bitcoin Cash, or as they are calling it, Bcash, is not Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's comical. You get people out there, there's one in particular in our sector, who's like, well, there's an infinite amount of Bitcoin. I mean, look at all these cryptocurrencies. Look at this. They just, quote, spun off Bitcoin Cash. No, they didn't spin off anything. A bunch of people, a bunch of actually bad actors with malicious intent, decided to create their own fork. And guess what? Anyone could do that at any time. And just because there's this lust and starvation for crypto assets, especially ones that, quote, have the name Bitcoin in it, even though it has nothing to do with Bitcoin, it's still around. I mean, it's trading at $290 compared to Bitcoin trading at $4,100. So obviously, no one cares about it. The hash power is like nothing, meaning the amount of mining that's going into it. And it won't die, but it'll just be just what they call an altcoin, just a nothing altcoin. And, you know, at times it'll be speculated on. It'll go up, and but no one's ever going to use it. And, you know, there was this one more potential fork that was supposed to happen, Segwit 2X, like in November. And frankly, I don't think they're even going to try that one because this one was such a failure. So I think it's proved how immutable the Bitcoin blockchain is and how strong it is. And I really think that 2018 is going to be the year where we get where we're if we don't reach, but we get very close to that. As I just I did this audio blog called The Ultimate Monetary Death Cross, where I think the entire world is going to start to realize that Bitcoin is going to usurp fiat currency at some point, and they better start paying attention to it. And that's when things get really exciting. That's when things are going to get really exciting in the precious metal universe, because that's going to be when the government starts to get fixated, as we talk about, like Don Quixote and his windmills, on Bitcoin, and start to realize that precious metals are not worth trying to manipulate anymore. Because A, they don't have much gold to do it in silver, and B, it's not really their monetary nemesis anymore. Precious metals have always been best as stores of value, and they've been stolen and abused and bastardized by governments trying to claim that they were on gold standards. But ultimately, the gold standards are abused, just like the fiat standards, and destroyed. And the gold winds up in the hands of the 1%, which is exactly what has happened in this country several times. But you know, now that gold and silver will be liberated from this quasi role, from this belief. I mean, there's still people out there that believe that there's going to be a gold standard, or because China's acquiring gold. No, there's not. The future of money is going to be crypto. And anyone who thought it was going to be fiat or a gold standard, and really a gold standard is just a fiat standard with a government pretending that it has some gold behind it, which it, you know, leases off or clips coins or swaps out of the market. You know, they're going to be taken by this tsunami of change of as I call it, Star Trek technology compared to the Flintstones technology that's currently being used. And it's going to shake up everything. And it's going to allow the 99% to have a say in the world, to have a better standard of living, to have more opportunities. And on the other side of the coin, to use a, you know, pardon the pun, you're going to have precious metals be able to do what they always did. Gold, I wrote today about being the money of kings, and that frankly, people will be taking profits in Bitcoin for the privilege of owning the money of kings, and silver will be the money of gentlemen. And they will together share the role of scarcity assets in a world where people are flooding out of the $300+ trillion fiat disaster universe.
Yeah, well, that was a lot, but
yeah. Always is with me.
But so how does this thing go? Do we go out with a whimper or a bang?
I wish I knew. Look, there's been plenty of bangs around the world. It's, again, like we talked for a millionth time about the secular Americans and their media who think that we're the center of the world. When not only are we just 300 million out of 7.5 billion, but we're rapidly declining. I mean, yeah, we still got great bombs. We can blow up anyone. But then again, you know, a lot of those countries could blow us up too. But economically, we have more debt than all the other countries combined. We've lost our entire manufacturing base. There's not a single positive trend going for us, including demographics. So look, we're just not a superpower anymore. The only thing we really still have is the reserve currency. And that's in a much diminished role compared to how it used to be. People are using it less and less. They're finding ways around it, including big countries like China and Russia, and a lot of the Middle Eastern countries are starting to go that way. But the big killer of fiat is going to be Bitcoin, because it won't be long before people stop thinking of it as a speculative asset. They're going to start to think of it as a new way of transacting money. That's so funny. The same, let's call him the five-letter word that starts with an I and ends with a T in the sector. And he says, Bitcoin can't be a money. I mean, look at how volatile it is. Look at how, I mean, there's no way, because people can price things in Bitcoin. It's like, well, duh, it's only 9 years old. When you're talking about it having a market cap now of $70 billion, $1 trillion. No, it's not ready to be transactional money. No one wants to spend it yet. When it gets to a level like, let's say 10 times its level or 20 or 100 times, then it will become more stable and then people will be using it. And the same goes with anyone who thinks that they're going to spend gold like this particular person. No one wants to spend gold. No one wants a debit card that says, oh, I have gold. You know what? I'd like to spend it on coffee. No one wants to spend it. I want to hold my gold. When gold goes to a level, let's say gold goes up 10 times, it's freed from the cartel, okay? And it's $10,000 an ounce or $15,000 an ounce. Well, yeah, maybe then I'd say I'd like to buy something with it. Give me a debit card, okay? Or maybe the debit card will probably be priced in Bitcoin at that point because the dollar will be dead. But that's the whole point is it doesn't mean that it's not money because you don't want to spend it. It has monetary value. It's just not a transactional currency. What he's doing, it's so comical. He's defending the dollar. He's saying that Bitcoin will never be like dollars. Everyone's pricing in dollars. Then on the other side of his mouth, he's saying, I expect the dollar to completely collapse. Mm-hmm. Because of the fundamentals are so bad. So why are you defending it as a currency? Why would Bitcoin, which has a deflationary, and gold, by the way, but Bitcoin, which has a deflationary monetary policy and is going up in value versus the dollar, which has a hyperinflationary monetary policy and is going down in value, and you yourself say it's going to go lower, why are you saying that Bitcoin is going to be the biggest? He says it's going to be worst bubble than the dot-coms. His quote is, these things make the dot-coms look good. Really? Dot-coms went to zero. Bitcoin is over $4,000 and widespread adoption is increasing over the universe. Meanwhile, he's talking about everyone should use the dollar. When at the other side of his mouth, he's saying the dollar will collapse. Great advice.
Yeah, right? Well, maybe he's right on both counts.
Really? How so?
Well, I don't know. You know, it hasn't become, it's not, like you said, a transactional currency yet. So a lot can happen between adoption and...
Well, yeah, it's been around for 9 years old. It's like saying that a nine-year-old child hasn't become a big success in the business world yet. Yeah, because he's only 9 years old. Can you let him grow first before you judge whether he's a successful astronaut or a lawyer or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, I think crypto's are where it's at, but just not sure of the timetable and of when they actually become a medium of exchange, which would really make them money. I mean, you can't go down to the local store and buy bread with it, all right? Not that you want to, but you can't do it.
Right, a dollar you can go buy bread with, but on the other hand, it loses the purchasing power of buying breads.
For now, you can buy bread with it. How long that will continue?
Right, but I mean, you can buy bread, but you're losing purchasing power by holding it. So which is better? Would you rather have something that is not quite used yet to buy bread, but goes up in value, or something that you can buy bread with, but goes down in value? And by the way, the whole thing about the dollar being this universally accepted, it's really not. I mean, you can't even use the dollar in Canada, and they have almost a parity exchange rate over there. They don't want dollars. Yeah, you can use it in really, really bad third world nations. You know, if you go to like the center of Africa, they'll take dollars. But, you know, outside of America, the dollar is not really used anywhere.
Mm, yeah. Well, we have a point. So we don't know what this transition's going to look like, obviously, but it's going to be here before we even know it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, look, the transition is going on in so many ways around the world. And the fact is, when I talk about the dollar losing its reserve currency status, I mean, it couldn't be more obvious that it's being used less and more countries are trying to use it less. I mean, we've alienated the entire Middle East. It's a big deal when you put them together as a group. You know, Saudi Arabia, they're talking about doing trade deals now with China. Now you have Russia and China doing trade deals. China's pretty much creating yuan-based trade deals with everybody. And, you know, I mean, look, the dollar can only hang on for so long while its purchasing power is being destroyed. And what's really going to kill it, of course, is when the Fed is, you know, look, the Fed, Janet Yellen already had her ding dong, the Fed is dead speech. Was it 3 weeks ago when she said, well, rates, the normal rates are historically low. So we really don't need to raise rates anymore to get to a normal rate. You know, he's basically saying, yeah, we're going to stay down here forever, but it's going to be when we have some kind of crisis sneaks through the cracks, as I call it, the most overdue financial crisis. Crisis in history. I mean, any crisis. I mean, at this point, a 10% decline in the Dow Jones propaganda average would be considered the equivalent of like Black Tuesday. because of all the leverage in the system and how people are so used to things never going down. I mean, it's that simple. But, you know, any kind of crisis anywhere in the financial markets, and the Fed is going to come rushing in with QE4 and going back to zero interest rates. And that's going to be when you see the real end of the dollar as the world reserve currency. And there's plenty of other choices of crappy fiat toilet paper out there. But while everyone's arguing over which fiat toilet paper is the best at the moment, you're going to watch Bitcoin explode higher and higher and higher and higher and get all the media attention. And the governments are going to talk about it. I'm reading today about all these Ukrainian congressmen that are saying that they're buying it. And you're sitting there thinking, I'm sitting there thinking of all the billionaires out there and governments that are thinking, why wouldn't we want to take a position in this? Okay, just to see. I mean, we're managing, what, $20 trillion? Buy $50 million worth. And all these guys thinking like that. And the next thing you know, it's trading at $50,000, and all of a sudden it is becoming a transactional currency. And I mean it. Look, investing in Bitcoin is risky. Okay, I wrote about it yesterday. Yesterday I wrote Bitcoin buying and precious metal swaps, the wisdom of experience. Trust me, read that. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not as easy as buying a stock at Charles Schwab. And there's obviously a lot more risk. I mean, look, the other day, yesterday, it was 4,400 when I went to sleep, and then it hit 3,800 in the morning. Now it's 4,100. So, you know, if you buy it wrong and you're not in for the long haul, you can get hurt, and there's withdrawal limits, and there's all kind of risks of being hacked if you don't do it the right way. So you have to be careful. But my point is that I truly believe that you're going to look up, and all of a sudden, the velocity of Bitcoin in the economy is going to be overwhelming. It's going to shock people, and it's going to be a very short period of time before it happens, within a matter of years. And at that point, that's when you're going to see all hell break loose in the fiat regime, the ultimate monetary death cross. And then sitting in the corner is going to be gold and silver, ignored by the powers that be because they don't see the need to deal with it anymore. And we'll look up and it'll be $10,000 for gold. It'll be $100, $150, $200 for silver. And no one will even be blinking at it. And, you know, again, we talk forever about the propaganda. The only reason you should own gold is because of its insurance. And even I have to say it. I mean, I'm marketing gold. I'm trying to get people to buy it. It's undervalued. There's many reasons to buy it. It's certainly is insurance against catastrophe. But so much of the propaganda that wants to scare people and make people feel ashamed and vilified is you would only own gold like in a worst case scenario. That could not possibly happen. And so people get in that mindset, especially when they're told everything's okay. And then, of course, there's the, and of course, if that happened, the government would confiscate it, windfall profit tax, and ban it. And they'd come to your house and steal it from you and say you're a national security threat and a hoarder and a criminal, you know, kind of like what they're saying now with Bitcoin holders. But the fact is, gold is going to just go up without all that stuff because of this great new invention, the greatest technological innovation since the internet itself, which is going to draw the attention of the world and the monetary authorities. And that's just going to be the most exciting thing we've ever seen. And I mean, to think that all these years that I've spent in gold wondering what would happen next, because I said there can't possibly be a new fiat regime. There can't possibly be a gold standard because it's really just a bastardized fiat regime in which the government steal gold and pretend that there's something back. What's going to be? I mean, and now I know what's going to be. It's just a matter of how long it takes. And it's not going to take a lifetime.
No, not at all. Happens quicker than you think.
Everything's happening quicker. I mean, we talk about it again. You know, I'm focusing so much on Bitcoin for so many reasons. I'm not focusing like it's not like I'm sitting here pitching buy it, buy it, buy it. I'm talking about the impact it's going to have on the world and the impact it's going to have on precious metals. I mean, I said this is the biggest ally I've ever seen for precious metals. Nothing else has worked for people to think that it's not. They're like, well, you know, in our sector, it's always a matter of, well, we're just hoping that the system just collapses of its own weight. I mean, inevitably, the math says it's going to. So people like me every day point out that math. Yes, inevitably, it's going to happen. There's going to be a crisis of confidence. The debt is going to default. It's going to be like, well, you can call it 2008 or Venezuela, whatever you want to call it. In some way, shape, or form, the system's going to come down. But, you know, they have fintech, financial and technology engineering, which is pretty powerful. That's why they're able to make the stock market literally go up every single day, to never have volatility, never have intraday declines, to keep interest rates down at record low levels despite all the money printing, and to keep gold and silver in check. I mean, that's check, check, check. They can do whatever they want. They even could keep oil $47 a barrel. They can even, under the ruse that OPEC is cutting production, when OPEC last month, meaning we just heard it yesterday, hit an all-time high production level. Yes, everyone, let that sink in. And I've been talking, how long have I been talking about the fake OPEC production cut, right? Mm-hmm. OPEC announced record production for June and then beat it in July. And yet we're told that oil price went from back from 40 up to 47, almost 50, because of production cuts. And then on top of that, if it falls a dollar or two, Saudi Arabia comes out and says, yeah, we're considering further cuts. I mean, this is what I mean. You know, you can only fool some people for some time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And all cartels fail, and the gold cartel and the OPEC cartel and the stock cartel. But the thing that's really going to kill it, and I get back to Bitcoin, is the fintech that they have, the derivatives, the high tech, the high frequency algorithms. The ability to control markets at will, and the regulators with their exchange stabilization fund, the president's working capital and financial markets, and the Fed and all these other manipulation operatives they have, all the swaps that the Fed does off balance sheet that doesn't count as money printing to fund like the European banks, for instance. That technology is primitive compared to the technology of cryptocurrency. And that's what's so exciting, because once the velocity of cryptocurrency usage starts to build up and people are aware of it and they realize that it's like a tsunami, it will absolutely swamp all attempts to mask reality with you know, manipulating markets and economic data. Yeah, and one more comment on economic data, right? You know, look, today, horrible, horrible housing starts numbers. Horrible, right? And, you know, no one cares. Yesterday, they report 0.6% increase in retail sales for July, right? 0.6% is a good number. I don't know. I looked at the expectations, you know, 0.5, and go, how did they even come up with these expectations, right? I mean, it's the government, what are they, feeding Goldman Sachs? Hey, say it's going to be 0.5% this month, because there's no way they could possibly. Unless they're using algorithms based on government reports, like these fraudulent soft data PMI indices, and just putting it in some formula, there's no way they can predict what actual retail sales are, especially when you have all these seasonal adjustments and, you know, double seasonal accounting and all that stuff like that. So, but anyway, they come out with 0.6 and everyone's all excited. It's a great number. Maybe the Fed will raise rates, right? And meanwhile, the odds of a Fed rate hike in December are still less than 50% after all this. But they say that the reason that the retail sales were up in July was because of car sales. And I'm going, I mean, and I listed all the headlines that refute that. July car sales just came out from the car companies, not from the government that just says car sales were up. They were all down. GM's car sales were down 2% in July. Ford's were down 3%. Chrysler's were unchanged. They probably were only unchanged because it's Fiat Chrysler, and probably the Fiat part was up and Chrysler was down. So if car sales were down from the car makers, how can they say that car sales led a surge in retail sales increases in July? It's crazy, right?
Good question. Yeah.
Well, and people buy it. They just write it. It's not, you don't see anyone on Wall Street say, well, actually, I saw one guy, he's not like a real Wall Street guy. He's like a independent. But not one guy on Wall Street says, yeah, that's a little fishy, because, you know, I cover the car companies. Car companies said they had not weak sales, down sales. So how are you telling me that sales were up a lot? But that's what you deal with, right? Yeah. It is what it is until it isn't anymore. And that's what the beauty of Bitcoin is, because I think it's the, you know, the most powerful weapon that we've ever had as gold holders and as the 99% to stop this. And they will stop it. And this is going to be really exciting as it unfolds, because as I was saying, in this space, which I've been involved in now 2 years, I've never seen anything change this fast. I mean, on a daily basis, like, you know, we're gonna have the SegWit is just locked in. It'll be on the system next week. You know, if you told me 2 months ago that was going to happen, you told anyone, you told the top Bitcoin guys, they would have laughed. They said, no way that's going to happen. And sure enough, they found a way to happen. Things just happen quick because, you know, this is technology now we're talking about. This is not Wall Street in Washington, which moves like a turtle. This is Star Trek technology versus the Flintstones age that we're in right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you've also got all these people working out of their home offices doing this stuff. You're not, it's not taking place in an office in some big, technology company. It's all being done by individuals furthering the cause.
That's right. And that's why it was so funny. You ever everyone should listen. I was telling you that I did this SGT report podcast yesterday. It'd probably be up sometime today. Believe me, people, this is going to get 100,000 hits. It's going to go viral. I went off. There was this woman, Lynette Zhang. She just came out of nowhere. I don't know who the heck she is, saying, oh, well, the IMF is developing its own crypto and it's going to take over Bitcoin. And I was just going off on her and pretty much going off on anyone who's it's just like I had this moment where I was like, I am just so sick of conspiracy theories. I'm so sick of FUD. I'm so sick of people who put out information that they're not sure about as fact and pretend it is. You know, we need, if we the 99% are going to move forward, and we are going to move forward, we need more alternative media and we need more truth being put out. So everyone, listen to that report, share it with people, and consider, you know, how you feel about how news is reported and how you can help to get the real news spread around the world.
Yeah, well, it's so true, because most people on the alternative media don't know the difference between speculation and fact. They use the two interchangeably, and there's a world of difference between the two. And really, if we're going to increase our credibility, you got to learn the difference. Facts are provable, and speculation, it just comes off the top of your head, and you might have good speculation, but it's not going to be provable. And this is something that's really corrupted the media, you know?
Well, look, I mean, in your case, you're almost like a journalist. I mean, you are just putting out reputable people and asking for their opinions and not trying to spin them, saying, here's what they think. Here's my view of what they think, but for what it's worth. And you can make your own judgments. But the thing that I found the most, I've been now 15 years in precious metals, and 90% of the information that's disseminated in precious metal sector is newsletter writers. Because the mainstream just could care less. The only time you'll see anything written about gold on Wall Street is when they're denigrating it or trying to make people think it's about to fall. You know, like the Goldman Sachs is constantly or like doing stuff like that. But otherwise, they don't care about it. They'll care about it when it has its next big run. But right now, they don't care about it. So it's all newsletter writers. And some of them, like me, I'm not a newsletter writer, but because obviously I'm the marketing director of a bullion firm. But, you know, I have free content out there on the web, on the internet for people to read. But I'm not really trying to sell my writing. I'm just trying to market a product. But most of the newsletter writers I found thrive, the ones I think are getting paid the most, with theories. If they can convince people that they know something that everyone else doesn't know, then they typically get better subscribers. I mean, we're talking about this Lynette Zhang, and you know,
Never heard of her.
I had never heard of her either until I got all these emails saying she put out these interviews where she says that there's a like a blockchain that the IMF is looking at that's going to take over Bitcoin. It's so dumb. But, you know, she comes out with this and gets put on the air and it gets 120,000 hits. Right? Because people just love conspiracy. I mean, I truly think that a lot of newsletter writers, not some, a lot, just know this. You get paid more to make up stuff. I was going to say make up SH blank T, to just make up stuff. Then you say, dude, have truth. I have no doubt that I would get paid less than some people who do this simply because people like it. They want to hear conspiracy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? They want.
It's like soap operas, Andy. It's like, why do people watch soap operas?
Right. You know? Sex sells.
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
But it's not even just that. In some cases, it's because they want to feel some kind of control. It's almost like a religion thing. Like, this guy knows. Cliff High's algorithms. No, thank God I can sleep now because someone has figured out the secret of the universe. Or this guy out here, he says he knows this stuff. Like a, kind of like a religious, like a Creflo Dollar or Jim Graham or whatever the guy's name is. You know, like, oh, he knows. He has a relationship. There are guys like this. This one particular guy, he claims to know everything. He literally, there's not a topic out there that's not related to a conspiracy. I mean, literally every single thing can be explained by a conspiracy that he is sure of.
You're making me laugh now, Andy.
Yes, because you know what I'm talking about. Literally every single joke. Thing. He absolutely knows that it's a conspiracy. He knows. He's got boots on the ground. Even if he does boots on the ground, he knows. Right? Meanwhile, me, right? Who does more research than me? Who writes more than me? Who speaks more than me? Who has the credentials of research? Who's a chartered financial analyst? Who's been doing this for all these years? Do I once say something that I know when I don't know? If no, I have facts, never. I say I know. If I don't have facts, I say I don't know. Here's what I think. Here's the facts. You can judge for yourself. But this guy and many others in our sector, they know. And my favorite of all to end this rant is these guys with the technical analysis, right? Because first of all, if you're in the precious metal sector and you are talking about technical analysis, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous because anyone who doesn't realize by now that technical analysis doesn't work in rigged markets, be it the Dow Jones propaganda average or gold, it's ridiculous. I mean, how could you have any money left if you actually trade based on this? The government paints these charts, at least the short term ones. It's very hard to paint the longer term ones, which is so why I get so excited about things like the 50 month moving average, not the 50 day or anything. Mm. But they paint them and it's so obvious. But you get all these newsletter writers that think that claim that they have proprietary knowledge of technical analysis. Believe me, if they had proprietary knowledge of technical analysis, they would be rich and they wouldn't be doing a newsletter begging people to give them $100 a month. I mean, this is one particular guy. He always claims that he's like a genius, like he's certified. He's like the greatest technical analyst ever. He's always bearish, you know, but he's always the standard. It's the standard in precious metals is to be short-term bearish, but long-term bullish, whether you're a technical guy or a fundamental guy. And the reason being, like, oh, the price is going down now, so I'll hedge myself by saying I'm short-term bearish. But if it turns around, then I'll say, yeah, I was long-term bullish all along. I mean, every single guy has done this, except for me. I don't talk that way because I'm never short-term bearish. I know the cartel is trying to hold prices down. Sometimes it works. A lot of times it works, but not always. But, you know, in this particular guy, remember, it was this weekend, right? This very weekend, like 3 days ago, you know, his article showed up somewhere. He had a free article and it was like turning bullish, very excited. And I go, really? You're bullish? And he's like, yes, everything's going the right direction. So what happens these days? Smash. And I'm going, see what I mean, people? Why are you listening to me? I mean, some of them don't even claim to have proprietary. They simply just say, well, I'm an expert technician. But you can't be a technical analysis analyst in this sector because it's rigged. And more importantly, you shouldn't be owning precious metals to trade them. And you definitely, if anyone's been listening to me for the 6.5 years that I've been begging people, I mean, I've been begging and pleading. I remember when I was at Torrey Hills Capital, the investor relations firm for all the junior mining companies, love them, the greatest guys in the world. They're still there operating in San Diego. But even when I was writing articles then, it was starting to seep into my articles how dangerous paper precious metal investments were, because that was the time when I started to give up on them. They are death. They kill people. Mining stocks, ETFs, closed-end funds, futures, options, certificates, you know, all these things. They always destroy you because of the cartel. The only way that you're going to survive and thrive is going to be with the physical metal that you are holding securely and safely. And people just don't understand this. I'm trying to give a crash course right here in how dangerous the sector has been. Thankfully, because prices have been knocked down so low on an inflation-adjusted basis and compared to mine production and money printing, you know, I just don't see any material downside here. I just don't anymore. It's just, this is as low as it can go from an economic standpoint. But, you know, that's why I'm so bullish right now on the physical metal. And I think it's, per these articles I've been writing, the best imaginable time to be rebalancing your portfolio with swaps. I call it high grading. If you want to take advantage of the lowest ever silver to gold ratio or platinum to gold ratio or the lowest people, this is the lowest numismatic premiums we've ever seen in 28 years of Miles Franklin. That's the one that I've been capitalizing on personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes total sense to get into them. It's definitely, you know, one of the 5 or 6 anomalies that we showed in the precious metals markets, and it's not getting any better. Even though gold's gone up a little bit, silver's gone up, slammed back, and we're more or less in the same situation.
And those anomalies are still there. I mean, you know, I wrote today about the money of kings, gold, how everyone always wants it. And, you know, people will be cashing out of some Bitcoin profits now and in the future because there's the innate desire to own the money of kings. And now you not only can own the money of kings, but you can own like the best high quality. Like I look at what I have now. I got numismatics that I bought for essentially the same price as regular gold coins. I mean, we're talking about authenticated coins from the year 1900. And I have the Call of the Wild series, the only, you know, 5'9" fine gold coins that have been made, limited edition, and I basically paid the same price as you'd pay for a regular Maple Leaf. These are the kind of things you can do right now, because as we've seen in the physical markets, when you have a move up, the premiums explode. And right now, these are the lowest they've ever been. So look at your portfolio and say, well, look, oh, man, I got all this silver out there. I got junk. I got generics. And, you know, maybe I want to swap it into higher quality stuff. Or maybe I want to own some of the Money of Kings at the lowest premium, numismatic premiums ever. Or maybe I want to take a little stab at platinum at the lowest ever platinum to gold ratio, since it has like a 95% directional correlation with gold over time. There's all kinds of things to do. Because we are in the middle of an eye of the storm. Maybe it's because it's August and the summer will be over soon. But these things aren't going to stay this way forever. And it's going to be cryptocurrency that proves the biggest weapon for us to get out of this storm.
Yep, that's
it. Get back into it.
Absolutely. And we got to leave it at that for today. Check out Andy's work over at milesfranklin.com. Sign up for his daily missive and frequent audio blogs. Email us at kl@carrylutz.com. If you have any questions, I've got a couple of questions next show we'll be talking about, Andy. Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Andy, we'll catch up with you next week. Same time, same place.
Looking forward to it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.